Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho. Welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today, 941-877-1552, or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Three-time Grammy winner Tom Chapin and his daughters, Abigail and Lily, a.k.a. the Chapin Sisters, offer 30 minutes worth of kid-friendly music with Mornings with Papa Tom Chapin and the Chapin Sisters. The show streams daily weekday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on Facebook and Instagram. All episodes are also archived on YouTube. Quarantined together in the Elder Chapin's Hudson Valley home, the three Chapins stream live from his living room, performing songs from Tom's 13 classic albums of children's music, as well as classics from the American folk music canon. The show provides lighthearted but intelligent entertainment for all generations, a perfect opportunity for families to gather and enjoy each other's company. I wanted to keep busy, adds Tom, and share these songs that I've written with my amazing collaborators over the last 30 years. I've been touring musician for more than half a century, and being stuck at home is uncharted territory. But as always, the music and a chance to sing with my daughters keeps me sane and healthy and happy. Tom Chapin has carved out two parallel careers in folk music as a gifted folk bass singer-songwriter, as well as the Pied Piper of family music. He started singing and playing guitar in a trio with his musical brothers, Harry and Steve, inspired by the recording of the Weavers at Carnegie Hall. Tom released his first solo work in 1976. Since then, he's released 25 more and given thousands of live performances, including innumerable benefit concerts. He's appeared frequently on TV and radio, in documentary and feature films, and is a beloved narrator of children's books. Tom is a longtime board member of Why Hunger, which seeks innovative community-based solutions to hunger and poverty, remains active in a variety of environmental causes, and is a strong voice on behalf of music and the arts in our public schools. So am I. Raised in New York's Hudson Valley, the Chapin sisters are third-generation musicians. Their grandfather was the jazz drummer Jim Chapin. Their uncle, the late folk icon, humanitarian, and one of my favorite artists of all time, Harry Chapin, Tom's brother. They started singing professionally at ages 6 and 8, soon after they began performing live at the annual concerts for Harry Chapin's food justice organization, Why Hunger. In the last decade, the Chapin sisters have released 4 full-length albums. They've been featured on NPR's Weekend Edition in Rolling Stone, Nylon, Spin, Paper, The New York Times, T Magazine, The Wall Street Journal, and The Washington Post, and have toured the world multiple times on their own and twice as members of She and Him's band. After taking some time off to savor the joys of becoming first-time mothers, they wrote, recorded, and released their most recent EP, Ferry Boat. Please welcome singer, songwriter, musician, storyteller, and 3-time Grammy Award winner, Papa Tom Chapin, to Interviewing the Legends. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Ray. How you doing, man?
That was a mouthful.
It was. That sounds like we've been busy.
It sounds like it. Well, today's program was on Stegosaurus recycling, and you know, my grandson knows all about dinosaurs, but he doesn't know what you were teaching today, which is recycling, which is really, really cool. I really wish somebody would pick up and you know, pick up your like a series or something like the Make-A-Wish program you had many moons ago.
Well, thank you. You know, TV is a lot different than it was then, but there's lots of streaming services. Who knows? The reason we're doing this every morning is has nothing to do with trying to get our own series or anything. It's really to keep us busy. As mentioned in your intro, you know, I've been a lifetime of performing, and all of a sudden we found that we're in, you know, stuck in house like everybody else, you know, in the world. But I was, my daughter Abigail said, "Dad, why don't we just do a kids show every morning?" Because they have been, Abigail and Lily both have 4-year-olds, 2 little girls, mm-hmm. who are mercifully with us as well, which has been a delight. And they just know firsthand how tough it is for parents to have kids 24 hours suddenly in their house who've been going to school or or just outside. And so I said, that'd be fun. And it gives me a chance to revisit. In certain cases, you know, I have 13 albums for families that I've performed, you know, started in 1988.
Right.
And, you know, 5 Grammy nominations for those albums and stuff. And suddenly I said, what a great idea. So we just started it, not expecting it to mean much, but we just threw it up there on my website. And all of a sudden we've got every day a bunch of people who at 11 o'clock Eastern time, you know, check in and say, we're here again. They start talking to each other during the show on Facebook and on Instagram. And it's become a whole little thing. Today was our 21st show.
Wow.
This is our beginning of our 5th week. Who can believe it? So, and with no end in sight at the moment. And we're loving it, you know. It's been really fun. And for me, what's delightful, of course, is singing with my daughters who grew up not only singing these songs, but in many cases, most of the albums they sang in the studio. They actually sang on the first versions of these songs. And now they have 4-year-olds who are listening to the songs in cars, and they know the songs as well. So it's been just a total delight. You know, what are we going to do this morning? Oh, we 9 o'clock at breakfast, we go, well, yeah, and I write out a set list, and they say, no, how about this one? How about that one? And then all of a sudden we just go in and do it. And it's been a delight, and it kind of centers our day. And I've been, you know, recently, Ray, singing mostly for grown-ups. And so it's really lovely to get back to the family music.
You know, your children are so lucky to have you sing to them when they're little. You know, it's so hard. You know, I can't sing, and my wife can't sing. So, you know, we do the best we can with videos and, you know, put on your music or whatever it is. But, you know, it's such a treat to pull out the guitar. You know, and just
it is when they're young. You know, I remember Abigail was in middle school, and they were going to go on a trip. You know, and I said, and the teacher called me up, and I said, that was Mr. So and So, and he wants me to go on a trip with you. Oh, well, don't bring your guitar. I said, well, he asked me to bring the guitar. I said, okay, Dad. Well, don't sing any of your songs. Which is middle school.
Yeah.
When we first started writing these songs, Abigail was 8 and Lily was 6.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd outgrown the toddler music, you know, really young kid, you know, like,
right.
At that time it was Raffy, you know, and really wonderful songs, you know, 3 Little Duckies and the stuff for 2 and 3-year-olds.
Yeah.
And now they were, you know, old age, they were 6 and 8, they were much past that. The whole question was, how do you find songs that you play in the car with your kids? And they liked some of the Beatles stuff.
Yeah.
They loved Bob Marley.
Right.
You know? They liked the Eagles because some of the songs they could harmonize.
Right,
you know? And
right.
So I said, boy, this is the time to do a record for families, because I really understood from about 4 to about 10 is the last time you're going to be sitting in the car with your kids listening to the same stuff. Because, you know? Once they get in the middle school, goodbye.
That's it.
You know?
Exactly.
Whatever they're playing, you don't want to hear.
Exactly.
And so that was the impetus to try to get together with these wonderful friends of mine, John Forster and Michael Mark and mm-hmm. John Cobert, and begin writing songs for families. And that became a whole other career, which I never expected. You know, that first record, I had a demo record, and I had a little name, as you know, I have a name as a folk musician, and I'd already done Make-A-Wish, so I, you know, some of my TV show. But I, on a spur of a moment, we needed a woman's voice, and I called up Judy Collins, and she said yes, and she sang 3 songs.
Oh, great.
On the first recording, Family Tree, and all of a sudden, it made it very easy to sell,
But, you know, with your family, you could be the American version of the Wiggles.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that because all the way through I've been doing this kind of what I think is, you know, I'm very proud of this body of work. But always the people on TV that are really well known. And it's never been I never can play a stadium or something, you know. And it's always been the Wiggles with somebody else. You know, it was Sharon Lowe and Bram, and it was various, you know, people early on.
Right.
And Raffi and those people. But it's been a wonderful thing to play for families, you know. And I really come from the folk side of this, which, Pete Seeger and Tom Paxton and Peter Paul and Mary and a bunch of people have all done wonderful kid stuff. And in fact, folk music in general really was not folk music for just, you know, teenagers on the radio. It was always for the entire human animal, 90 years old and 3 years old and all the way through. And so that kind of was my inspiration. I had no worry about, oh my God, it's going to ruin my rep to do kid stuff, you know. It was more about, boy, this would be fun to try this. And who knew that there would be a, you know, a career move? I had no idea. But as I said, it's been recently I've been doing, you know, mostly grown-up stuff and playing, you know, the elderly, the folky and the Chapin and doing all those kind of things as well. But the highest joy is playing with my family, you know, with my daughters, and Harry's daughter Jen is a wonderful musician as well.
Yeah.
And my brother Steve is still alive, and Harry's band, Big John Wallace, and those. So, you know, I've been very lucky in my career to be able to bounce in a whole bunch of stuff that interested me, you know. What you want to do to get up in the morning, you know, and that's part of what this does for me.
You know, it's funny, when I was in grade school, we sang nothing but folk songs, you know, and for some reason they stopped doing that. I remember, you know, Shoe Fly and all kinds of, you know, and we used to sing those during class, you know. It was such a fun time. And I'm with you on, you know, schools need the arts program, you know.
Bingo.
I mean, I was huge on art in school all the way growing up, and, you know, and music, you know, I did music and I learned a lot. You know, they used to bring different instruments in the class and we used to learn those instruments. You know, it's so important. I just hope they don't get rid of that.
Well, it's a struggle, you know, because it's always about, they keep sort of moving toward the corporate model, you know, what's the bottom line here. But the reality is education is much more than that. And I'm a huge believer in the arts and education. For another other reason than to help teachers, you know.
Yeah.
What kept me, as you mentioned to yourself, what kept me in school and most excited was drawing and music and even a little bit of drama and stuff. Oh, that kind of stuff was always, if you could find a way, and there are wonderful ways to teach curriculum through that. That makes it so much easier and more enjoyable for everybody. And I think it's a real mistake to just go back to, you know, we just got to teach them. What did they learn today? They learned the letter A and the letter this and the number this and that, you know. Yeah, that's great. But there's a larger thing about, especially in this time when all the rote jobs don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you have to think out of the box, and what helps you think out of the box more than the arts, you know?
And that's
you can teach that at school.
Well, that's how you get an imagination, you know. That's how I became a writer. You know, I've written a few books, and if it wasn't for that, I would have never been a writer.
You got to learn to, life is a little, very much about inventing yourself over and over again.
Yep.
Especially for those of us in the arts, you know, I have a song called Guitar Child, and then one of the lines is, folks like me do not retire, we just reload.
Yeah, I like that.
So this is one of my reloads. This forced to be at home. Okay, let's just make some music every morning. And people respond, I think, also to having my daughters there, who are wonderful singers, Abigail and Lily. And it's nice to see a family singing together.
Yeah, I've been listening to a lot of their stuff on YouTube. You know, I know they did Toxic. That was a great version of Toxic they did.
Oh, man. You know, they did that on a whim, and KCRW in L.A., we were living in L.A. at that point, picked it up, and it was the most requested song for the year. It's Abigail singing on there.
That's beautiful.
And it's just amazing. They're wonderful musicians. I don't think they even realize how good they are. Wonderful musicians and singers. And they make this old voice of mine sound pretty good because they put the beautiful harmonies in it.
It's true.
They sure look better than I do, I'll tell you.
Yeah, tell them I also like Kill Me Now, which was a favorite of mine.
Oh, my goodness.
And also Shady River. I like Shady River.
Yeah, Shady River is great. Kill Me Now is my mom, bless her heart, she died at 95, and at about 93, she heard them singing. I said, girls, why are you singing this? You know, they didn't understand the indie folk thing, you know. She said, that's a terrible thing to sing, you know.
It's funny, my mom passed away in 93, and my dad, I still take care of my dad, he's 95.
Wow. Bless you. Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. He's a World War II vet from, you know, Saipan and Okinawa.
Oh, no kidding. Wow.
Not many of those guys left.
No, that's right. Yeah.
Some of my favorite tunes of yours, Family Tree was incredible, you know? I love that. And Big Rock Candy Mountain, I'm like, come on.
Well, Big Rock Candy Mountain, those are both songs that were co-written by my friend John Forster for the very first recording for Family Tree, the name of the album, as well as the song. And I actually approached him about when I started thinking about doing the kids record, and he is such a professional, wonderful professional writer, and he changed my whole world. You know, folkies tend to, you know, get a song about halfway finished and then go out there and start singing it, you know.
Right.
And then over the years it changes and they fix it. But he's a professional writer, so he would say, don't take the pen away too soon, you know. Every little rough spot we work on, and it incredibly changed my writing. He taught me so much. And those songs, you know, the Big Rock Candy Mountain, of course, is a rewrite of a great old hobo song, mm-hmm. you know. It used to be, the buzz of the bees and the cigarette trees and the soda water fountain, and whiskey.
Right.
Whiskey springs and stuff. And we changed it, the buzz of the bees and the bubblegum trees and the soda water fountain. We made it a kid's song. And I've been very lucky that a lot of people have picked, you know, a lot of other performers have picked that up because it's such a wonderful tune anyway. And the idea of a Big Rock Candy Mountain is a very kid-like idea anyway.
Yeah.
So it's been nice that, and so we actually, one of the things we decided to do was also in those 13 albums, pick some old favorite tunes. We've done a bunch of classical rewrites, like Swan Lake.
Mm-hmm.
Don't make me go to school today, oh mom, don't make me go to school, da, 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 which is, I've done that with several symphonies, and it's really wonderful on the rehearsal. You know, they start playing it, and then the words, and they all start laughing, you know. Because, and a couple of people said, I'll never see Swan Lake the same again.
That's true.
And, you know, we have we've done William Tell Overture for, yep. About a horse, you know, and a trail ride. It's been great fun. The great thing about children's music, one of the guys who wrote on Sesame Street once said, mm-hmm. it's the last bastion of freedom in the recorded world.
True.
I said, what do you mean? He says, well, it means that, you know, kids have open ears. They don't care if, you know, I mean, you make a record and the record company says, well, what is it? Is it folk? Is it rock? Is it pop? Is it indie? What is it? And a kid's record, it's just a kid's record.
Exactly.
So you can do rock and roll, you know, shoveling blues, and next to it you have a classical thing, and next to that you have a reggae, and next to that, whatever it needs, you just follow. And that's been one of the great delights with these wonderful musicians here in the New York area. And my collaborators are all just spectacular musicians. My band is when we play Ted, my bass player and collaborator is Michael Mark, who wrote the Entertainment Tonight theme song.
Oh, really?
Huh. And Michael and John Coburn, who's written a bunch of stuff.
Right.
He was in John Lennon's last band way back when, as a kid. And then he wrote Baseball Tonight. And so, you know, these guys.
Yeah.
It's a great thing about being in this area, that there's wonderful people who I've tried to keep up with over the years, because once you find somebody like that who's a friend and who's a great, you know, resource, it's been great.
You know, one song you do, I'm glad it had a kind of a happy ending, Don't Play With Bruno. I was a little worried about that one, you know, he's a dweeb.
Sure, well, that was the whole idea, really, you know, was the idea of how kids talk about other kids.
Right.
And the great thing about that song, it's called Don't Play With Bruno. You can look at it on Spotify or someplace. It's a wonderful song. And that's John Forster and I, and he's wonderful about those kind of set pieces where it's almost like a little theater piece, you know. And it's about Bruno, who these two Dweeb, and Bruno's the one who's a real doer, and
right.
wants to play with him because he's doing all this stuff. And then it gets into surreal. You know, he's out there digging a hole, and then he finds a horseshoe, and then he finds a tractor that still runs.
Right.
And then he finally finds a lost city, and all the kids are going over there playing with him while the girls are going, oh, what happened? You know?
Yeah.
So it's really, and that in a sense is what's delightful about some of these songs, which is, for a kid's song, one of the first things we said was that we're never going to do was say, you should be doing this.
Right,
you know?
Right.
You should recycle. And this morning I sang R-E-C-Y-C-L-A. It starts with a stegosaurus in the forest, mm-hmm. munching on some hay. Lay down to snooze in a bed of ooze and sadly passed away. Her body changed and rearranged. And, you know, it becomes, and it ends up becoming oil. But the whole idea, the way I talk about it, is getting through the neck of the bottle. You know,
right.
intrigue somebody. Tell a story. Make it different. Don't go, you know, do you have all these things? You should recycle them. Well, that's not going to get, you know, that sounds like parents talking. The kids go,
right.
shut the mind, go away. And what we're looking to do is open the eyes, say, whoa, what's going to happen next? You know. And that's been a great delight in terms of writing that and writing in general. As I've gotten older, I've gotten better and better at this, and I'm smart enough to find some wonderful collaborators who, it's a lot of fun to sit at the table with two guys just playing and
doing
these things, you know.
You know, so many kids, they love dinosaurs. My grandson, Madden, loves dinosaurs. That's all he talks about. But nobody knows what happened to them afterwards. And then when you mention the oil, you know, that's, you know,
yeah.
that's, they're really going to be shocked. You know, they're
yeah.
really good. They're, you know, they're going to learn a lot from that.
Well, that's the hope, you know.
Yeah.
And also hope is also, this is family music. It's not, you know, it's not like, give it to the kids and then you go out in the other room, you know.
Exactly.
It really was. And my concerts too, I always said, no, this is family music. You don't put the kids in front. You
mm-hmm.
guys sit in the back and talk.
Right.
No, everybody sits with everybody because they're, the hugest thing for us has been to make it fun for ourselves, you know. Is this fun for ourselves? And then is it clear enough for kids?
Mm-hmm.
And it's because it's, and the highest praise has always been, hey, Tom, yours are the tapes. Yours are the CDs we take on long car trips. And that's, and when I get that, I go, bingo, thank you so much. And the other one is teachers.
Yeah.
Who many, many teachers have picked these up because they're very visual.
Yep.
You know, Claudia at my office this morning just sent me 4 different videos of teachers singing This Pretty Planet.
Oh, cool.
To their schools. You know, all
yeah.
teachers now home and they're sending out, the music teachers are sending out stuff to the kids at home. And every day there's 2 or 3 or 4 schools and 4 people who are doing versions of This Pretty Planet that round that John Forster and I wrote for the first recording. And, which has not only gone around all the schools in North America, but in 1 year it went around the world because it's one of the songs used to wake up the astronauts on Discovery.
Oh, wow.
We woke up John Glenn.
Did you really? You're kidding me. Wow.
It's amazing how, you know, a kid's song you put on a recording. What happened was that was one of the, you know, the PR department said to ask each of the astronauts on that trip to pick a song to, you know, that they could play in the morning. And one of them was, of course, It's a Wonderful World by Satchmo, you know.
Yeah, right, right.
And then one of them was This Pretty Planet. I had no idea, it didn't mention it to me, but the pilot had 3 kids and a wife who was home all the time while he was up there. And they had my cassette at that point, you know.
How cool
is that? And they played it in the car.
Oh, man.
And so she said, I forget his name, I'm sorry, but, you know, George, you should do This Pretty Planet. And so I get home from a Sunday, from a gig, and in those days, you know, it wasn't the cell phones at that point, it was payphones. So I had at home, I had my answering machine was just full of people saying, hey, they played this other, you know, which is great.
How many people?
Praise really when one of the songs, you know, it's like one of your kids going out and doing something great, you know, the song goes out there and has a whole life by itself. And that's, you know, that'll be one of the songs that I'm remembered for, you know, and John Forster as well.
How many people could say their song has been played, you know, out of this world?
I don't know.
You know? You know, another song I love by you is Ellis Island. It, you know what it reminds?
Oh.
It's kind of had a Roger Whittaker feel to it, you know?
Uh, I know who he was a little before my time. I got so steeped in the thing, but that happened because Michael Mark, my bass player, earlier, and I, we were getting together, we were starting writing kid stuff, you know, for one of their kids' recordings.
Right.
And I mentioned that that weekend we'd gone to Ellis Island. And when, this is before Sandy, the big, you know, hurricane, and
right.
got trashed at the museum there, and it's back now. But, we went, and I took my two daughters, my wife was working that day, and I said, let's just go. And you know, New Yorkers never go to the Empire State Building in the way and we were in Brooklyn at that point.
Sure.
And we jumped on the ferry boat, went out to there, and it was so moving. It was just an astonishing thing to go through, and it was 17 million people came, you know, through there. And, this island where every immigrant, for a while, and they came to North America, you know, came to America, came through Ellis Island, if they came from Europe. And I came home, I talked to Michael about it. I was there 2 weeks ago. And so we just sat and wrote, you know, we invented the guy who went through Ellis Island, and we tried to use this stuff. And I tell you, that's become a very powerful song these days, you know.
Definitely.
I think almost every concert, not the kids stuff, but.
Yeah,
I don't do it in the mornings, but when I do a concert for families, even though I'll sing that, and because of the craziness going on with the government these days, and how we've forgotten that really we are built on the immigrant experience and people coming here for the best of reasons, not criminals, but just to escape and to come to this country and reinvent themselves. You write a song and then find out that 20 years later that it's a whole different animal, you know.
Well, my family came from out, you know, they were, I think we have a certificate of them coming through Ellis Island. You still have their certificate and everything. It's pretty, pretty amazing story.
Before that, actually, so none of us did, but it's still, you know, when you go up and think of those stories, most people, it's an astonishing thing. And I'm very proud of that. It's a lovely thing, and I love singing it.
You know, I've had Tom Rush on a few times. I love Tom. He's such a great guy. But I tell him, you know, I said, there's nothing like a lone musician playing guitar with a song and a story. To me, I admire that more than a full rock band. You know what I mean? I really admire that, just to pick up a guitar and do what you do. I mean,
well, thank you so much. You know, that's one of the things that my daughter Abigail came up with the idea of us doing this. She said, Dad, you're the right tool for this.
Yeah.
You know, you're at home. You put a microphone into your computer.
And I
said, can you hook me up? She says, yes. So come on, we'll just do it. And so bingo, there we are. You know, I have a guitar and a banjo and an auto harp, and the girls can play too, but they're basically just coming and they just sing, you know, because it's hard to get all the instruments in there in front of you know, Instagram and stuff.
Sure.
And I was thinking, gosh, you know, we found this little thing here where, you know, we're not getting paid for it, but we're being useful, you know?
Yeah.
It's sending out some good vibes at a time when, boy, do we need it.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of artists doing this now, you know, which is pretty cool, especially on Facebook.
Exactly. You mentioned, what else can you do, you know? And
exactly.
You want to be doing that. And I feel, you know, blessed that I have this body of work that I can do, and also bring a lot of the folk stuff in. You know, we've done a couple of Pete Seeger songs, and we did, you know, This Land Is Your Land, and I think we're going to do the Garden song, you know, inch by inch, row by row, and a couple of days by David Mallet.
Yeah.
And we're just sort of, it's a wonderful trove of material that I can, you know, we can put out there for to have a wonderful half hour for you and your kids. Actually, there's a lot of my fans who don't have kids, but are just alone, and are just out, and don't miss it because it gives them a little, you know, upbeat thing at 11 o'clock in the morning. Or if you're further west, you know, 8 o'clock on the east on the far coast.
You know, I was already too old for Make a Wish, but I still watched it.
Well, you know what? So did many college. That really, you know, gave me a career because it was. I think the ones who really got it were the college kids.
Yeah, that's funny, isn't it?
It was 11:30 or 10:30. 11:30 on Sunday morning, so around here. And that was right after Rocky and Bullwinkle.
That's funny.
And somehow college kids get watched that. And then right before NCAA football. So it was like a perfect kind of this crazy hip crew. And it was kind of a hip show. You know, it was so fast and so many things, so many quick cuts in there. I was very proud of that show.
Oh, the intro was awesome. You know, like you said, it was hip.
Yeah. My brother Harry used to call it the, for 6 to 11-year-old speed freaks. There were more cuts in Make-A-Wish than there were in Gone with the Wind.
Think about that.
You went dunk, 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 dunk. And the problem is, you know, they never cut, it was ABC News that did it, and they just had all this footage, and they just threw it in there.
Yeah.
And then years later, I tried to get the rights to just put out a, you know, DVD of it.
Sure.
Just to make a wish. And that by then, ABC was owned by Disney.
Right.
And the lawyers said, you know what, they never got the rights to his material. So they'd be a, you know, Charlie Chaplin film,
man.
And then there'd be something from, there'd be a movie, and there'd be all these different cuts of footage that they used without getting any rights for it. So they said, you can't use it.
That's a shame.
What a bummer that is, because it was a great show.
That'd be a big hit again if it was re-released. Do you know that?
Well, I've seen it because Sandy at one point, my brother Harry wrote the music for it, and I changed it. Actually, I'll tell you, Ray, I was not that much of a writer, and I'd written a couple of songs, but Harry was the writer, and my brother Steve was the writer with the Chapin Brothers. And then I went to do Make-A-Wish the first year. We was here in New York in the summer. It was, you know, two songs every show, short songs. And one of the songs on the first show, one of the words was Circle. So All My Life's a Circle came from that. That's the only song that really got into the canon. The second year, I was going off to England. And between the first year and the second year, Harry had hit with Taxi.
Yeah.
And suddenly was really busy.
Yeah.
So I kept bugging him for this. You know, I was about to take off for England, and we're going to record the songs in England like the week before each show. You know, I do it. And it took about a month and a half in the summer. So the night before he said, I'll go hide it for you. So the night before he gives me I'm leaving the next morning. He gives me a cassette, and I'm listening on the plane of 26 songs, right? And about five of them were really good, and the rest were really kind of spotty. He was so busy, he just sort of, he had these lyrics, and he sat that night before, going, okay, that's good, you know. And I'm listening to the thing, going, oh my gosh. And so I just had to rewrite the stuff.
Right, right.
And I found out that I was a writer, you know, because nothing will get you, make you sit down and write like your ass on national television.
Exactly.
Like, you know? So that summer and that happened. That was kind of what happened the rest of the four years that I co-wrote all the stuff. I'd made him sure that I liked them before I put them up there.
Sure.
And the other interesting thing, I'm telling you stories here, but I get to England after the first year, and Make-A-Wish was, you know, on it, and one of the songs was Circle, and my mother had it was only a verse and a chorus, and my mother had really loved that song, so she kept bugging Harry. She said, you know, because I was living with her that summer, and she heard me rehearsing and singing and stuff, and so she bugged him, and he finally wrote a third verse for it. And then when he did his first album, he needed an extra song, so he could put Circle on it.
Yeah.
And the album Taxi.
Yeah.
So I get to England, and the number one hit, this is the next following summer, the summer of 72, I think.
Right.
And I get there in June, we're going to be there a month and a half, and the number one hit in England by the New Seekers, the follow-up to I'd Like to Teach the World, the Sing in Perfect Harmony, which is huge here, was All My Life's a Circle.
Huh.
By Harry.
Wow.
And I'd never heard anything about it because it didn't do a thing in the States.
Right.
It did, but worldwide it was a number one hit. So a lot of people, you know, around the world know that song. It shows how quickly things can change. You know, Harry was a total unknown.
Yeah.
They asked me if I wrote songs when they hired me to be, I said no, but my brother does. And I got Harry the job as a songwriter for Make-A-Wish. And a year later, the number one hit in the world is her Circle. I get there and say, wait a minute, this is my song. Let's get on the jukebox.
Well,
small world.
My big brother's name is Harry, and Harry Chapin was a hero of mine. Ever since Taxi came out, I mean, I was a huge fan of Harry's. What was Harry like growing up as a big brother?
Well, he was a magical guy, I was trying to keep up with him. You know, I was 2 years younger,
right.
But I'm a tall guy and I was a good athlete, so I kind of kept up with him. The family joke, which I coined at one point, was two's company, Harry's a crowd. which everybody liked because it was so true. You know, he was just totally unafraid. And,
right.
And, hey, but the best thing about Harry was it was always we. It wasn't like, watch me do this. It was like, hey, we can do this.
Yeah.
And when he started World Hunger, you're now Why Hunger, that he and Bill Ayers had that same thing. You know, we could end hunger.
Mm-hmm.
We.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been a partnership, and that organization has just done unbelievable work. And now, your listeners should know, you know, it's the hunger issue in America is just really scary.
It is scary.
There were 37 million Americans at in food insecure before this hit. 12 million of them were children, our children.
Wow.
And it's just and now it's just been blown out. They have a food and hunger hotline.
Mm-hmm.
And that's increased about 1,000% the calls coming in.
Unbelievable.
And but they have a wonderful thing called let me get the name of it. But anyway, it's whyhunger.org.
Okay.
There's a donate. Wait, place to donate there. But they're doing incredible work. They've always worked getting hungry people in touch with food and helping them towards self-reliance.
I guess
I'm one of the longest running board members.
Yeah.
In fact, I am the longest running board member. Harry called me up in 75 and said, well, you know, getting serious about this hunger thing. We need to get a board. You want to be on it? I said, I don't know. Do I? He said, yes, you do.
Okay. That sounds like my brother.
folks, there. I urge your listeners to go to whyhunger.org.
Uh-huh.
And just see the kind of things, the work they're doing, and the information they give you out, give you it. And if you're hungry, you can call up their hotline, and they'll say, where are you? Here's what you do.
Really?
World Hunger, whyhunger.org, whyhunger.org.
Okay. Yeah, I'll make sure I post that on all my sites for sure.
Me too.
There's a lot of people in lines. I mean, huge lines. You know, for food.
Yeah, we're supposed to be distancing the lines. But most of the, I just saw this on the front page of the Times this morning. There was this line in Texas of, I don't know, 12,000 people in cars just waiting for food.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a scary time.
It is a scary time.
And we really need to hang together here.
Were you aware of the songs that became hits before they were hits for Harry? Like Taxi and WOLD?
Sure.
So you knew they were coming.
I knew they were coming. I didn't know how. When Harry became a star, it was surprising but not a shock.
Right, right.
Because he was indefatigable, and he was always, you know, incredibly talented and bright, and you know, there were four boys, and it's a foul. My brother Steve is an amazing character. My oldest brother James was as well, and we were, you know, it was and my parents and my grandparents and stuff. It's a family of artists and can do. So it was not surprising, but the surprising thing was how. That he did it his way.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the fact that I remember when he wrote Cats in the Cradle and Jack Holtzman at Elektra, his record company, said, that's the single. And Harry said, what, are you kidding me? It's like a folk song. You ever heard that on the radio? And Jack says, exactly. And they had a fight about it, but
really?
Jack won, thankfully.
Yeah, exactly.
Number one in the nation, you know. But, you know, he was... if there was Harry's strength was also his weakness, which is he was so energetic and so busy and so committed to his own ideas that he got too busy.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
And you know, but that was also what made him so from each other, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, when he was writing those songs, we were around when he put his band together and stuff, and he was writing for us, and some of the songs we turned down for my band, you know, because they were too long, too much of a story thing. And he, boy, did he show us how to do it, you know, with the cello and that whole thing, the sound and stuff. It was great to watch.
You know, when he sang a song, it was like he was the character. I mean, like Taxi, you thought you knew he was a taxi guy, which he really did. He did drive a cab for a while.
No, right? He never drove, but he got a cab license.
He did get his license.
I'll tell you that story. It was he was working in documentary films. Uh-huh. He flunked out at a Cornell twice.
Cornell twice.
University. And every time he flunked out, our uncle was Richard Leacock, married to my mom's wife. Uh-huh. Richard Leacock of Leacock Penny Baker, the great documentary filmmakers, you know, Monterey Pops, sure, and all those things. And so Harry always had a job with, you know, Ricky would get him a job to some kind of grunt work, a sound man or something on a documentary film. And he became, you know, very, working on that. But it was the first Nixon recession, and he couldn't have any jobs, and he had his apartment to pay for. So
yeah.
We're here in New York, and so he took out a license to drive a cab in New York, and he was supposed to drive at midnight on Monday night, you know. And Friday, he starts thinking about his old girlfriend, whose name was Claire, mm-hmm. not Sue. And she was, her father had been president of Eastern Airlines, and
really?
They lived in Scarsdale, a rich thing, and they looked at kind of askance at Harry, this character, you know.
Uh-huh.
They liked him, but they thought this is not a life, you know, like, he's not gonna be the right guy for her.
Right.
And we lived in the village, you know, in Brooklyn, and they told their daughter, listen, always take a cab, never go on the subway, never go, you know. So Harry said, and then they had finally broken up. They had a stormy relationship, but Harry's first real serious girlfriend. And so he said, well, what will happen if I'm driving one night and Claire gets into the cab?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, that, you know, middle of the night dream, you know.
Yeah.
What am I going to say? You know, because he was a big talker. You know, I'm going to do this. Well, Monday he gets two job offers, so he never drives a cab. And he takes both jobs, both you know, film, the documentary film thing.
Right.
So he doesn't have to drive a cab. But then it becomes the song.
Yep.
You know, he said, oh, it was raining hard in New York. No, that must make it Frisco. It rained hard in Frisco. And then he writes the whole thing. And it because he had lived it in his imagination even before,
sure,
so it never quite happened.
Yeah. And then he did a sequel to that song,
yep,
and it was like reverse, where he became famous and she was, I guess, happy in her life, but she gave up stardom and all that stuff. She wasn't.
Yeah, he kept showing me the sequel, and I was never as impressed with it. And so, but he put it out anyway.
Well, actually, you were in his band, I think, in Hamilton, Canada.
There's
there's a video of Live 80, and you were part of that sequel.
Well, I did. I toured for about 6 or 8 months with Harry.
Right.
After he did a Broadway show called The Night That Made America Famous, and it ran for a few months and got not middling reviews and didn't last. But I was in the band. That was the first time I really played with him again. And then we went on the road and I would open and do, you know, two or three songs by myself, then the band would come out, two, three, three songs, then we'd get Harry out, he'd do his show. But he got to be really old for me, you know, so I actually had said, Harry, I'm not going to do this anymore, you know, I'm going to get really angry if I do this. I'd rather play my own little guys, three people, and, you know, my own, you know, 200 or 300 people, whatever it is, and have my own career. So I did.
Sure.
And then about a few months after that happened, he was going to film the show, and he asked me to come and be part of it, which
was
fine.
Right.
So I knew all the songs and stuff.
Yeah.
And of course, my brother Steve ran Harry's band, you know, uh-huh, for years. And so it, you know, the three brothers are very close,
mm-hmm,
especially musically. We help each other out. When he was forming his first band with and putting together a Taxi and those things, we were in the room with everybody and helping, and it was a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful time.
First time I saw Taxi live was, it could have been like the Midnight Special or something, but when Big John Wallace came out and started singing baby so high that she's sky, you know. It blew me away. I says, that voice is coming from this big dude, you know.
Oh, well, he was, he was a choir boy with us. That's how Harry found him.
Uh-huh.
And he was one of the great choir sopranos I've ever heard when he was, first 10, 11, 12 years old. He was a little bit older than me.
Right.
It was really astonishing. He'd sing those great. We were choir boys in Brooklyn Heights, in an Anglican, choir boys and men singing the great hymns and stuff, and, mm-hmm. And the Hallelujah chorus and various things. And my brother Steve and I, not Harry, and he was a little older. And John was just amazing, amazing musician as well. Well, the story about that is the first time Harry went on the Tonight Show. They did Taxi.
Yep.
And the place went nuts, and they went into commercial and came back, and they were still applauding.
Yeah.
After the commercial, that's like 3 minutes.
Wow.
And because it was just so remarkable, it's such a it's like a little opera, There's a wonderful new documentary about Harry called.
Really?
When in doubt, do something. Rick Korn and his crew put it together. It'll come out sometime this year.
Oh, fantastic!
I've seen the early rushes of it, but they have a wonderful interview with lots of people,
Right.
But also with Billy Joel.
Uh huh.
Talking about Taxi.
Yep.
And saying, man, it's like an opera. And when that dude sings the high part, baby, so high, and he sings it,
Billy Joel
singing. He's sitting in a room with all these motorcycles, and he's talking about Harry and the song, and he sings the, and he says how at the end there, when the guy says, Harry, keep the change.
Yeah.
And then he says, another man might have been angry, another man might have been hurt, another man never would have let him go. I stashed it on my shirt. He goes, I got chills, man. He says, that's true.
Yeah.
I don't care if it ever happened, it's true. So Billy was right on that. It was great. And he had the great thing. He says, when Piano Man came out, everybody thought I'd stolen from Harry Chapin. They used to bug me, but now, what? Harry wrote the best songs.
That's right.
I'm proud of that. That's good.
Is Big John still around?
Yes, he is.
He is?
He must be 78 years old, I guess.
You're kidding me.
He and Steve do perform, not this week and not this month, but they still do occasional performances, and about three or four or five times a year, if you're very lucky, you'll hear the Chapin family do something, and John comes. He's an amazing guy.
I want to ask you real quick about WOLD. I was a top 40 DJ back in the 70s. So I, of course I hit it big with this song as well, was that about Jim Connors? The something about,
it was not about anybody in particular.
Okay.
It was Harry. When he first got into this thing, he said, I got to work the radio. So I'm going to get my stuff on the radio. And he worked very hard. So every time he went to a town, he would go to the radio station. And I've met so many guys in my first interview. I was just a rookie at a radio station or the college station was Harry Chapin. He was so gracious. So he was indefatigable. So and after that first year or so, he said, there's a life of these guys who have a career in radio,
mm-hmm.
and that became him inventing that guy. It wasn't anybody specific, but it was every DJ, a professional DJ. It's kind of like my Michael and my guy in Ellis Island. You kind of invent a guy who or a gal who you can tell the story around and see the life, and that's what Harry he knew these guys very well. And I don't think it was about any particular, because when he sang it to me, he says, this is what these guys are like, man. And, you get a job in Boise, and then that station goes under, or their boss doesn't like them anymore, the voice or something, then they change the thing, and then had to get someplace,
Yeah, that was me. I was a nighttime DJ. I was the guy who always closed the station down.
Sure. Well, and we knew the guys in New York, WNAWFM.
Right.
So, like, the first FM who played album rock as opposed to the hit parade.
Yeah.
And that became a huge thing for a while. But Pete Fornatel and all the guys here in New York, and Harry knew all of them. And so I love the idea of how DJs love that song, because it's like, hey, he's talking my life,
Yeah. I was lucky enough to play Harry on radio because I was top 40. So, yeah. My claim to fame, I guess. Well, one other song you're very known for is the Happy Birthday song, right?
Well, you know, I didn't write that. I just heard it from somebody else, and it turns out nobody knows who wrote it. But it's called, it's not a traditional song. The music is, of course, by Hans Lehár.
Right.
Right. It's the Merry Widow Waltz. We mentioned earlier how we quote things, you
sure.
know. And so, as John Forster says, it's great to quote dead composers, they don't argue, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we took that, but it's somebody else. It's a Canadian guy, and I'm going off on the name. I'm sorry, it's my 75-year-old brain. I'll think of it when I go off. But a wonderful kids performer up in Toronto.
Right.
Sang it, and I just started singing it, and then I put it on my recording because it's such a great song. I called him up, and he said, I didn't write it. Then I heard some people told me that it was actually a radio station in New York in the 30s that someone had put the words to that, and it could be anything. You just never know. But it's kind of the folk process, you know, that somebody took a known tune and wrote a happy birthday to it. Happy birthday, happy birthday, we love you. But I tell you, a lot of people sing that song now because of me going around singing it, you know.
Well, Tom, it's time for you to make your wish. Here's a question I ask everybody. I get some very interesting answers, okay?
Yep.
If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform, collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Oh, Paul McCartney and John Lennon.
Get that a lot.
Well, you think about it. First of all, they'd be fun to hang with, you know.
Right.
And talented, and it'd be take me in a wonderful direction. Let me think. Who else? Woody Guthrie.
Yep.
And who else?
Pete Seeger.
Let me just think about this a minute. I'll go with them.
Okay. Good answers. Yeah, I get some interesting answers. Things you would never expect, you know.
Like who?
I don't know. Like the, you know, Robin Trower, the guitar player. Okay, he said James Brown. You know.
Funk. Yeah.
Yeah, he likes the R&B things. Petula Clark said Pink Floyd. That was weird. You know,
I picked that one in a million years.
No, me too. Yeah. I got a book out that just came out. It's called The Rockstar Chronicles. That's series 1 out of 4. And I asked the same question to a bunch of artists. I interviewed like 45 guys, intimate questions and things like that. And at the end of the book, it's got all their answers. And it's pretty cool. It's really
cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's one of those questions where if I'd known beforehand, I would have really thought it through. But coming cold, I'll stick with those.
I like to catch you off guard.
I just finished rereading a wonderful book called Woody Guthrie: A Life by Jill Klein, which is an astonishing book and a wonderful. So I was thinking about Woody, who was of course not a great collaborator. He was a great wrote his own stuff, but it would have been interesting to meet him. So that's what I had in my brain. And I think McCartney and I was in college when those guys hit.
Sure.
And I was already a professional musician, you know, with my brothers. And they really their chord progressions and their writing was so astonishing, and watching them progress album to album, you know, Revolver is the album that I really got involved with when I first started, and then from there on out, every album was a different thing, you know, and watching the writing and the stuff and the production was just amazing. So I was inspired initially by Pete Seeger and the Weavers and those wonderful folk writers like Tom Paxton and then I was at the right age to listen to, you know, Paul Simon and Dylan and, you know, all those. I mean, and Joni Mitchell and the Eagles were great writers. And, you know, it was a really fertile time to grow up in terms of songwriting.
It was.
And so I feel blessed about that.
Yeah, it was the best time ever for music. It really was. Yeah, especially radio.
It was, it, there was a moment when pop radio was the place you were listening to find out what was going on in the hip world. You know?
Exactly, sure.
You know, it was really, what's the new Stones record going to be? What's the new Beatles record? What's the new Paul Simon record? You know, those things were happening. What's the new Dylan record, you know? And now I guess it's movies or something else, but it's moved on.
Yeah.
And the radio's gotten pretty formulaic.
It has. It's all corporate now.
And that's a loss, I think. You know,
a big loss.
You could hear Cats in the Cradle.
Yep.
Next to whatever, you know, James Brown. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. And so I miss those days. But you know what? We're inventing our own life, and there's wonderful young performers who are doing great stuff.
Yep.
And I'm related to a number of them, which is really great. My daughters, Abigail and Lily, the Chapin sisters, and Jen Chapin, who is a wonderful writer and performer as well, Harry's daughter. So, hey, Ray, it's been delightful talking to you, man.
It has, man. I really mean it. You need to be out there for the kids, especially now, because you're such a great artist. You got a great message from every song. And I think they need you, you know. I mean, how long more can Sesame Street go on, you know?
Well, we're going to do what we do, and if they find us and want us to do something, we're happy to do that. I'm not about to go banging into into TV land again without an invite, you know.
Sure.
And I'm loving what we're doing now, and your listeners can catch us any morning, 11 o'clock on Eastern Time, wherever you are. And it's the way to find us is TomChapin.tv, www.tomchapin.tv, and you'll find a way to connect onto Facebook and Instagram. And it's also on, as you mentioned, on YouTube. They're logged up there, and they're coming from my living room. You'll see what my living room looks like, and my daughters are there, and sometimes my granddaughters come running in and running out. They were very excited the first couple of days, but now this is old hat to them, so they're busy playing elsewhere in the house. 4-year-olds.
You know, the fact that your daughters are with you doing this, it just shows what a great dad you've been all these years, you know? It really does.
Hey, Ray, you know what I know. The mom is the one.
Hey, we got
to... Shout out to me, but my wife, Bonnie, is the best. And, you know, I love the idea of, you know, it's like... I have that same song I mentioned earlier about the folks like they do not retire, they just reload.
Right.
The line about it's a hard life for the kids and wife when they're the ones to stay. While I'm singing songs about myself 10,000 miles away.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the truth. You know, I, when I'm here, I've been great, but you know that. But the folks who are truck drivers and pilots and who have to, you know, traveling salesmen or whatever, have to be out. If they have good families, it's because of the people who carry it at home. And that's my wife, Bonnie.
I agree. Me too. Behind every great man is a great woman.
Hey, yeah. In front of every great man is a great woman. Let me tell you, I have daughters, and I am so thrilled that there's this kind of a whole change in the dynamic of women. It's a hard way to go, but boy, I'm so into it. I have not like two daughters, but I have two granddaughters, and watching them, they're astonishing people.
Well, I have no problem saying they're the boss, and I never argue with my wife. Whatever she says goes.
I just got a sign from upstairs that I'm supposed to go up there and check out what's going on.
Tom, thank you so much for being on the show today. Hope you come to Florida when this is all over. You know, do some gigs down here.
Where in Florida are you, Ray?
I'm near Tampa.
Near Tampa, okay.
In the Tampa Bay area.
Great.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, man. Well, listen, stay well and good luck, and we'll this too shall pass.
Thank you. You too. Same to you and your family. God bless you guys.
Thanks so much, man.
All right,
talk
man.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye. Bye. For more information about Tom Chapin and the Chapin Sisters, visit, they're on Instagram, www.instagram.com/TomChapinMusic. On Facebook, www.facebook.com/TomChapinMusic. www.tomchapin.com, the official website. For the Chapin Sisters, www.thechapinsisters.com. To listen to their broadcast, www.tomchapin.tv. And also www.thechapinfamily.com. Very special thanks to Howard of Howlin' Wolf Media for arranging this interview with Tom Chapin and the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsom of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. And please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news, people. And my new book, finally out, entitled The Rockstar Chronicles Series 1, Truths, Confessions, and Wisdom from the Music Legends That Set Us All Free. Order yours today on hardcover or ebook at bookbaby.com or amazon.com, featuring over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest rock legends on the planet. God bless you all, and take care. Be healthy and be safe, and have a great week. Bye-bye now.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.